anytime somebody came over to the house, they were like, they honestly picked on my house. They're like, it's a nice house. It has good bones and like it's very updated, but there was nothing in it. There was nothing on the walls. I had a couch and a chair and a dining table, and that was about it. And it's a brick on slab house. Like, it's a decent house, but they'd go, this looks and feels like a bachelor pad. I was like, well, you can go home. Like, you do not have to be here. But my son would come out and be like, have you seen my bed? Have you seen my bed? And they're like, no, I haven't. And he's like, come look at my bed. Like, he would bring them back to the back of the house and show him his bed. And I was like, that's right. Made his bed, and he's proud of it. So that's all I cared about.
Welcome back to the Make or Break Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Stephen Machuca, aka The Wood Pastor. Find out what it's like to pursue your dreams one project at a time. What is up, guys? This is a showcase edition of the show where we normally will feature a project that you guys are working on, and this comes out every other week. So if you guys would like to be on a future episode, tag me in your posts over on Instagram at Make or Break Shop. I would love to feature you guys in a future episode. This one's going to be a little bit different. We're actually going to get into Steven's journey as a maker. That is going to be kind of the showcase that we're going to have in this one. So it's a little bit different flavor, but you guys are going to enjoy it. But before we get into that, as always, the show is brought to you by you guys over on Patreon. And if you guys are interested in being a patron of the show, first and foremost, thank you guys so much if you are. And then you guys get some cool rewards, whether it is some sweet stickers or you guys can jump on these calls live with our future guests and get your questions answered and a bunch of other stuff. So I encourage you guys to check it out over at patreon.com Make or Break Show. I got to set the stage just a little bit. If you guys are a fan of Malcolm Gladwell, especially the book Tipping Point, there's a really cool description of different people that he has inside of it. Basically, everybody can fit into one of three-ish categories, a maven, a connector, and a salesman. And a connector is someone who is just connected to everybody. And it feels like they are kind of the center of a huge social network. And they feel like they can connect people all across the board. And when I was talking with Steven, especially seeing him online, I really feel like he fits into that groove, because you will see him posting with new people that he's bringing down to Texas, or he is connecting other folks together. So he is all in this maker community. And what I love about his story is he is in the middle of it right now. What I mean is, like, Jimmy DiResta or even Guy Dunlap on just the traditional furniture side of things, those guys are almost at the end of the journey that a lot of us want to be on. They're full-time, they're doing their own thing. And Steven is just in the middle of doing all of it. This recording was mid-December, and since then, he's actually had a really big announcement. Let me have him tell you real quick.
I put the announcement on live, but I figured I'd go ahead and put it in my feed. I just resigned from my education job on Monday. Today was my last day of work. I will be starting at a cabinet shop on Monday here in town, Beaumont, Texas. So I guess you could say I'm a full-time woodworker.
So that was an update he did recently over on Instagram. But let's get the rest of the story and what brought him to full-time making inside of a cabinet shop. All right, so to kind of start off, I'd love to get into, and I know you've kind of told the story before, but the Wood Pastor, which is funny. I think you were, I think I, like pretty much everybody else, assumed that you were an actual pastor.
No, not at all. I mean, not at all, like total opposite, but no, the simple answer is no, I'm not. And I always thought that it would be funny to later and just flip it. So when people start asking, are you a real pastor? I'd be like, yep. And they're like, no, wait a second. Were you not at first?
Yeah.
But that was really my biggest hesitation whenever I picked the name. I wanted something original, but very simple to look up across all medias.
Yeah.
And right. It started out as a nickname, but really I wanted something that was searchable and then also said you know, builder, and then it said Christian. And I think I get that in those two names. And I knew I was going to get the question a lot, are you a real pastor? And, you know, it's totally fine because it's a conversation starter. It's part of the beauty of the name. But really, it was just, it was a nickname. And I ran with it, and I was like, this is really original, but really kind of no one has this name. I mean, I couldn't find it. I found one other person that had a website, and it was Woodpastor, woodpastor.com, and they were like over in Europe. And I was like, all right, I'm going to just take this and run with it on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. So I did.
Well, kind of get into your background a little bit. When you were growing up, were you making stuff, or was kind of this whole making journey, woodworking journey, was that something that hit a little bit later?
It really did hit later. Like, I've always been good at like tweaking things, but not from like the engineering standpoint. Like, I don't think anybody would have ever looked at me and be like, oh, he's going to make things, he's going to build. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, anything that I want to get into, I get into it and I go kind of full force. And this was just kind of a means to an end. Like, it just started out as one little project. I never was like, all right, I'm getting into woodworking. It was just like, it was really step by step. And then I was doing it enough that I was like, maybe I should make this a business. So I did. I had talked to a couple of different people about, you know, where I should go with it and why. And, you know, I didn't just, but I saw it go in there too. So it made it easy. I think just actually labeling as a business was the hardest part. Like, how am I going to label it? Do I need a brand and all that crap that comes with all that, especially if you're going to, you know, put it out on social media. People are looking for a website, and are you full time and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, I guess going all the way back then to high school, what were you into growing up?
Man, I was such a loner. People like, what'd you do in high school? Nothing. Like, I didn't do anything, man. I didn't do clubs. I didn't do sports. I think I was in the basketball class for 1 year. I was in 10th grade, and I'm 6 foot now, but in 10th grade, I was 5'2". So needless to say, I did not make the team. I was just like comic relief in the class. Like, they kept me in the class after I didn't make the team. And, my junior year, I had 3 art classes. And if I was into anything, it was art. Like, really, that was it. Like, I was always taking drawing and craft. And it's not like I was into making, but it was either you had to take art 2 or 3 or whatever, paint, and art 2 or 3 craft. Like, there was two different art classes, and I just tried to fill my schedule with them because I didn't even have a full schedule. Like, in high school, we were on like an A-B schedule. And my second day, I had early out. So I had 3 arts and I had early dismissal on every other day.
Was there a favorite something you made in art class, or is it just kind of something to pass the time?
So this is what this is why I freaked out. I didn't know a whole lot about your background. And then, you know, I saw your name on your Instagram, the Make or Break. And then I went and found you. And then I started looking through your feed. Drawing was what I was into. Like, if I really would have looked into what I could have gone to college for, it probably would have been for like some kind of animation. And I don't even know what colleges offer that in my area or even outside my area. But I was one of the first, I was one of the first people in my family. My parents, everybody to go to college. I was the first kid in my family to go to college and graduate from college. So
that's awesome.
Whenever I went, I was like general studies. I didn't even know my options. I was just like, I'm going to college. So I did not pick drawing. I mean, I didn't even know what there was. I think just not knowing, I ended up picking general studies for a semester and then got into teaching and stuck with it till I graduated.
Gotcha. Where'd you go to college?
In Beaumont, actually. I actually live about 10 minutes outside of Beaumont in a small town called Vider. But Beaumont has a university, and I got my bachelor's there, and then I got my master's there, and they're both in education.
Okay. Gotcha. And you were an elementary school teacher for a little bit?
Yeah, I was up until last year. So I got about 10 years in elementary. It's just funny as an adult, you're still in elementary. And then,
yeah. What grade did you teach?
I taught pre-K to fourth grade. The only grade I didn't teach was second. So for 9-10 years, okay. I taught pre-K for 3 years, and that was a beast. That's probably one of the hardest jobs I've ever had.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. It was work, man. It was a lot of work.
Yeah, because you're having to like take care of like their bodily functions. I imagine too. Like it's not just teaching.
For sure.
Like, they're tiny.
Big time.
My wife is a third grade teacher, and this is her, I guess, fourth year teaching. And just the story, because I had no like idea what teachers did, but just the stories that I hear and mm-hmm. the work that goes into it. Like, I mean, it's a lot of stuff you got to put in to do it. But then you said, so you transitioned a little bit. Is that right?
Yeah, I did. When I started working on my master's, I in the same district, I was asked if I wanted to move to the elementary just because it had more grade levels. The campus I was on was strictly pre-K, and it just looked good on your master's that you're basically finishing your master's in a bigger school with more grade levels. So I did.
Gotcha.
And then I had a boss there that really kind of took me under a wing. And then I moved into like a semi-admin role. And then from there, last year, I applied for a job at the Region Center, which is also in Beaumont. So they're kind of over about 35 different schools in this area. I mean, like they span about an hour and a half away. So like we have to travel to some districts sometimes. And I'm still learning this job. Like I just got this job in June at the Region Center. So I work for Region 5 Education Service Center. So we basically, our job is to train teachers.
Okay. Gotcha. So still teaching, just a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then how did woodworking like enter this at all? So you're teaching, but you didn't really build anything. It sounds like as your background, like why did you decide to make something?
I was a single dad and I wanted my son to be comfortable in my house that I had just bought, which was my previous house. I basically bought it from his mom. And I got back into the house and I needed to furnish it. And I didn't have money to furnish it. And I wasn't going to buy junk furniture. Like I literally thought, I'm just going to save and buy one nice piece of furniture at a time. And then I was like, you know what? You can build sturdy furniture out of pine. I just don't know how. And I had friends that knew how. You know, they knew enough about literally cutting wood and putting it together. And I said, here's the idea that I have for a bed. Can we make this happen? He said yes. It was enough confidence for me to buy wood and follow through with it. And me and this one guy started it. Me and another guy finished it. My grandpa came and looked at it, tweaked it, like added a ladder to it, a better ladder. And so basically it took about four of us with no plans to carry this out. From there, I started looking up plans and it just turned into, I mean, I was super proud of, dude, I made my son's bed. And then I made my own bed after that. And I got a lot of positive feedback on Facebook and working with women in elementary. They asked me if I could make them a twin bed for their kid, and it turned into tables, and then me just kind of having the confidence to play with whatever I wanted to do from there. I mean, it took a couple years to get moving. I've only been doing it for about 5 years, but I guess it's just, you know, your limitations are, you know, your imagination at this point, time.
Yeah. So when you got that bed built for your son, do you remember what it was like, I guess when he first saw it, like, or could get into it?
Yeah. I mean, I really think he was more proud of it than I was. Anytime somebody came over to the house, they were like, they honestly picked on my house. They're like, it's a nice house. It has good bones and like, it's very updated. But there was nothing in it. There was nothing on the walls. I had a couch and a chair and a dining table, and that was about it. And it's a brick on slab house. Like, it's a decent house, but they'd go, this looks and feels like a bachelor pad. I was like, well, you can go home. Like, you do not have to be here. But my son would come out and be like, have you seen my bed? Have you seen my bed? And they're like, no, I haven't. And he's like, come look at my bed. Like, he would bring them back to the back of the house and show them his bed. And I was like, that's right. made his bed and he's proud of it. So that's all I cared about.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I see you made that for your son, and then you built yours. And it sounds like it kind of got moving from there. The teachers, when they're asking you to build stuff, is that when you first started like making stuff like for payment, like for other people?
Yes. When I made his bed, all I had was a circular saw and a drill. And then I got to the point to where I had a friend that had a miter saw, and he's like, you can borrow this until you get your own. And I was like, okay. I think after one build, the first thing I bought was a miter saw and an air compressor, because I really like using a brad nailer. And I needed an air compressor for the brad nailer. So really, I just kind of planned every build. I was like, okay, how much profit can I get out of this to buy one more tool? That was it. And then if I wanted to experiment on a build that I hadn't done, like a dining table, I literally built it for myself first. And I was like, if it sucks, I'll just own it. And if it's good, then I'll advertise it for sale, and if somebody buys it, I'll make myself a new one. That's really how it went. It's like, I'll build myself a queen bed, and if somebody likes it, I'll sell it. If not, I'll use it for myself.
Was there ever something someone came to you with that like you hadn't built, but you were like, all right, yeah, I'll figure it out? Or did you always kind of want to have one that you'd have some experience on?
Yeah, like cabinetry stuff still kind of freaks me out, because if you're off like a 16th or even like a 32nd on one spot, it just kind of translates to the whole build. And then if you're at a square and you're trying to put doors or drawers on something, you're having to shim and you're having to fix these mistakes, because I have never, I don't think I'm a bad carpenter, you know, woodworker, but I'm definitely not a fine woodworker. And it really takes that kind of skill to keep everything square and smooth. And I like things to look good, but not necessarily be, you know, within a 16th. So whenever it comes to entertainment centers and doors and drawers, I'm like, okay, I gotta really focus on this and get my measurements perfect. And I'm not a planner. So I went by plans for the first couple of years, but those intricate builds, or one measurement, you know, compounds on the other, those can still freak me out sometimes. I like them because they're a challenge, but I know they're going to take me a lot more time as opposed to a table, which still isn't an easy build, but in my mind, because I've done it so many times, you know, I can do it.
Yeah. At what point did it kind of switch for you in terms of thinking of it more like a business? So like you mentioned, like wanting to put a name around it, and actually kind of marketing a little bit.
When I transitioned from like white pine, yellow pine, which are cheaper materials, there's nothing wrong with that. You can still make that stuff look nice, but that is more DIY. I was trying to transition to like custom builds. Like I wanted to set myself apart from guys that were just throwing together, you know, 2x6s and saying it's a farmhouse table, which it was, but they're selling their tables at like $250, which is ridiculous to me. I don't know how they're making any money. But at some point I had used a hardwood for something like walnut, and I was like, this would be so nice if this was a tabletop. So I transitioned to hardwoods, or at least tops. Like I was really pushing hardwood tops for tables, and people in this area were not buying it because I was pretty low budget at that time. And when you start using hardwoods, guess what? Your prices go up. And I don't know if it was a respect thing or if it was just such a change in the materials I was using. It was hard to get what I wanted. And I was still cheap as far as a custom build using like walnut and oak and just different like pretty basic stuff that a lot of guys are using. They're using hardwoods, like they weren't super exotic or anything, but it was hard to get the price that I wanted. And I had talked to a friend of mine that does wedding videos of all things. And he just started talking to me about building a business and, you know, what I need to do. And, you know, I need to learn to tell people, no, hey, here's my price. This is it. If you don't want to pay for it, then, you know, I've actually referred business to other people that I know are building cheaper builds. And sometimes people will come to me and just hey, if you can't build this, do you know where or whatever? And I'll do it. But it just keeps, it kind of keeps a funnel going through me. And, but if people are looking for nicer stuff and custom, then I charge for that. And I think that's what transitioned me into the business. Like, I was like, man, I really need to figure out a way to not make people, but just show people I'm serious about this. It's not just like a, hey, let me throw something together and make a little bit of money off of it. It's I'm serious about what you want. So that's when I started the website. And when people are like, you have a website? It's like a living business card. And I've just added pictures and updated it. And then I started doing videos and my Instagram grew and stuff. And it takes time. Like, it takes a time to get that. I don't know why I can't think of the word right now, but just like a resume, kind of build that resume up, especially online.
What advice would you give to people? Because there's probably a lot of people listening that might have been in your spot where they're just kind of making stuff for their home and they're thinking about maybe building some stuff for other people. Like, what do you wish you knew then, kind of looking back on it where you are now, getting into all that world?
A lot of people are saying this right now, and it's I wish I would have got into YouTube earlier. I don't think it's too late now, but I do think if you could have got into it a couple of years ago, it would have been good. But getting into building itself, figure out what you want to build, what you like building, what you want to build, and where you might go with it. And that's going to help you start from square one. I don't like saying, just start. Well, it's like, I don't really know what I want to do. Like, you really got to figure out what you want to do before you start. So do you want to be the table guy? Do you want to be the content guy? Do you just want to be social? Like, do you really just want to build like a brand for yourself and like start a business? Or do you want to be like the hands behind it? Like, do you want to be making the stuff? Do you want to sell small stuff? Like, because a lot of people go, why don't you have an Etsy account? I was like, I really don't sell a lot of small stuff. And to me, Etsy is more for stuff that you can ship. Well, I'm not shipping dining tables, okay? I mean, maybe one day, but I'm not right now. So it's really, you got to figure out where you want to go with it. And I think the struggle for me has been, and it's not a big struggle, it's just, it seems like every 3 to 6 months, I kind of refine where I'm going with this as a business. My original purpose for getting on Instagram was to grow my presence in my area. I didn't realize what an international reach Instagram had. And then when I saw what other people were doing with it, it kind of made me switch my focus into just growing an account, just growing a presence, period, whether I was selling anything or not. And then from there, it kind of led me to trying to do YouTube videos. And that's really brand new for me too, but really just refining what you want to do. And mine has changed. And I know that.
So the Instagram, you mentioned it. Was there ever a moment where it was like starting to take off a little bit, or you noticed that people were starting to follow what you were doing? Cause I mean, you're getting close to what 20,000 followers on there, or has it been kind of a steady build the whole time you've been on?
Instagram not changes a lot, but it does change just like Facebook changes, just like YouTube changes. They change what they offer and stuff. In the beginning, when you're a smaller account, you grow really slow, it seems like. It seems like it's really hard to get anything to go viral on Instagram like you can on other medias. I want to say last spring, like right when spring started, it started growing a little bit quicker. And I've tracked my progress. Like, I think I hit like 9,000 sometime around in August. And then I'm almost at 20,000 and it's December. So in four months, I've almost doubled, but it took me 9 months to get to nine. So I think it's easier to grow or do what you want to do or have more influence when you have the numbers. Like, I mean, it's a numbers thing, but there's a lot of people that talk about, you know, how to grow your Instagram and stuff like that. And there's a lot of talk about buying followers and bots and all that kind of stuff. Like, to be honest, in the very beginning, I was just trying to grow numbers, and I didn't think of it as a as content creation. That was just the last couple of months. I'm like, okay, content creation, you know, it's a term that people have been throwing around. But in the beginning, I had a couple friends that had feature accounts and they used bots just to basically keep them active when they were not on Instagram. Does it make sense?
Gotcha. Okay.
Like they're not buying followers. Yeah. They weren't buying followers and they weren't buying likes, which is a huge controversy on Instagram right now. For a lot of people with numbers or with low numbers, it really doesn't matter. But to me, there was no harm in setting up something that just likes, like it would target a hashtag or it would target certain kind of accounts or something like that. And it would like so many an hour. Like it was just like an automatic liker, seriously.
Yeah.
And I really think, and this was in the beginning, I did it for maybe a month or so. And I really think it hurt my account. I thought it was going to help it, but it hurt it because it would like some weird stuff. And I shut it down. And when I started really managing and focusing on engagement and activity myself, that's when things started moving. Because you know what you're doing, if that makes sense. I think the hard thing is to actually be active on different medias all the time. That's like the trade-off if you're going to do it, and you want to do it well, you really have to commit to it. And I don't want to be on social media all day.
Yeah, totally. So you're rock and rolling with Instagram, and you've mentioned you feel like you're kind of shifting more into content. And then is it this year that you got on YouTube? And I know you've been putting out more videos, especially here recently.
About this time last year, I put out one video with my wife because she said, will you show me how to make a cutting board? I was like, can I video it? She's like, yeah. And then I just kind of clipped it all together as a fun project. I never thought, hey, I'm going to keep putting out videos on YouTube. And then I had a friend do my story, which basically just talks about where I'm at. And it's very personal and kind of almost like trailer-ish. It's really cool. Like it's still one of my favorite videos on my YouTube channel. But it doesn't really tell you the kind of videos that I'm putting out. It was really just kind of like a marketing thing for me. Like a get to know you, get to know me video that I could share with companies or even people. Like when people say, are you really a pastor? I was like, have you seen my story? And they're like, no. And I'm like, check this out real quick. And they'll watch it. And they're like, that was really cool. And I was like, thanks. Well, the hard part about that awesome video is trying to recreate anything close to it, which I don't think I'll ever do, but I do talk to my friend a lot about, you know, videography and stuff. And I think I put out three more videos on my own and they get better each time. Like they're still a work in progress on, I think the hardest part with getting into YouTube is finding your voice. Like if you're getting into it, you're watching a few YouTube videos. If anything, I really did not start watching YouTube videos until I decided I wanted to put videos on YouTube. Well, if you're only watching two or three accounts, then you kind of, you're like, oh, I really like that. I want to do something like that. And then you watch someone else, you're like, oh, I really kind of want to do something like that. But you still want to be yourself. I think that's the hard part. You're like, where do I want to go? Do I want to be a DIY guy? Or do I want to be like a ton of personality and just, you know, goof and then maybe show a few techniques? Or do I just want to be like all film and you just got music and me building? I mean, your whole goal is to get views and comments and stuff too, to grow your channel. So I think that's the hardest part right now, is just kind of finding exactly, you know, how I want to be perceived while still being myself. You know, I don't want to like fake people out, but I want to be me.
Right. Was the video of your background, was that the friend you said that was a wedding?
Yeah.
Videographer?
That's him.
Okay. Yeah. When I was watching it, I'm like, this feels like in a good way. It's like, this feels like a wedding video, the shots and it's put together really nice.
Yeah. He's really good. He brought like a ton of equipment with him. He lives in Colorado now, we went to high school together. Like we went to school together in town and it was just something that he offered to do for free. And then like, anytime I'm doing a new video or I have video questions, he's my go-to guy, along with like one or two channels on YouTube, but he's just like a quick, smart resource. And they're, you know, like you find yourself gravitating towards those people.
Oh yeah, totally. We'll see. Well, so this episode is going to be coming out at the beginning of 2018, but we're recording for folks that are listening towards the end of 2017. What are you looking forward to the most in 2018? Or kind of where do you see all of this going? Are you just kind of riding and see where it goes?
I mean, if I can pick, I want to fine tune it. And what I've been talking about is trying to push more content, which is just continually growing your accounts. But I do want to get on YouTube more. I don't like releasing or doing a video once a month. So I really need to fine tune, like, what videos do I want to put out? Are they too niche? Is niche good? You know, that kind of stuff. I don't want to do something that 1,000 people have done, but then I still want to stay true to some of the stuff I'm building. I want to take risks too. Like, I have a couple like artsy-ish ideas that are very simple that I think anybody could do with, you know, one or two tools. But my goal is to, over the Christmas break, because I still get 2 weeks off, like in 1 week, I'll get 2 weeks off, is to just plan and then to bank like 5 or 6 videos. And then in the new year, release those a week apart. And while those are releasing a week apart, I'm banking another video to release, you know, 7 weeks later. So I'm always like 5 weeks ahead or 6 weeks ahead, if that makes sense. And,
oh yeah, totally.
You know, when people go to your YouTube channel or even Instagram, you know, Instagram is just a mini YouTube, basically. Like, no one's going to follow somebody that's not active. So I think the best thing for growing a YouTube channel, this is just, you know, what I'm figuring out. This is not the tools to growing a YouTube channel, because it's still pretty small, is you got to be active. So once a month is good if it's a really good quality video. But I think once a week would be even better, even if you have a 3, 5, 7 minute video. And then I think you learn from there. I think you do get faster at some of the things that you do, but I'm just trying to do one thing at a time. But I like the idea of content, mm-hmm. because custom is really hard to chase around here right now. It's really hard to meet client needs, and it's easier to do content because I'm kind of working for myself, if that makes sense. I'm kind of working on my time, and I release a video when I want. And if I want to work with a company and they say okay, then I'm going to do that. And that's something that I just started doing in the fall of this year, is I've worked with 2 or 3 companies. Either they've sent me something, or we've agreed on a contract, you know, for a certain price or something. And this is like real small time, like, but it's kind of get my feet wet into content creation. I'm still learning a lot as far as content creation goes. I got a lot of people asking me questions, and I'm like, hey, I've only worked with like 2 or 3 people, and I might not be the guy for long term, but I'll tell you what I've done and what I've learned. I mean, I don't mind talking numbers. I don't mind talking any of that. Like, I'm an open book. Like, the more open book you are, I really think like the more people want to follow you and learn from you anyways. Even if you're screwing up, you're just like, let me tell you what I do wrong.
Yeah, and I think that's what is so cool about your story is, like, so some of the folks I chat with, it's like they're almost at the other end, like the Jimmy Durestes or the folks that are they're it's their deal and they've been doing it forever. But I mean, you're in the middle of it, which I imagine a ton of folks are doing it, and it's cool just to see you kind of sorting through it all, but then still being like super excited about what you're making. So
the hardest thing is being patient and then doing one thing at a time, because when you're doing 5 things at once, you want it all right then. And I'm just like, slow down, make sure you do it good. Whatever you do, do it good, and just be patient.
Well, sweet woman, thank you so much for chatting with me. For folks that want to check you out that haven't already, is it thewoodpastor.com?
Yeah.
Is that the best place to send them?
Yep.
Okay. And then is it The Woodpastor or Woodpastor on Instagram?
The Woodpastor. Yeah, it's The Woodpastor everywhere.
And The Woodpastor on YouTube, I'm guessing, too.
Yes.
Cool. Well, man, I appreciate your time. It was a blast chatting. And your bills are so cool. So especially some of the stuff you've been putting out lately, I've been like, man, I need to get out and build like the with the swinging porch bench. I was like, I need to make a porch bench now. So it's real cool.
Like, something like that was like I say selfish, but it was really like, I want to build this. I'm going to turn this into content, but it was for myself. You know, it wasn't like a client build. So that's the whole beauty of that. Like, I made a video. And then I worked with the company on it, to be honest. So like, it's just like, you can put it in four places and be like, cool. It's a win, 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 win.
Yeah. 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 That's awesome. Well, man, I appreciate your time, chatting with me here after work. And, I can't wait to see what you got coming next.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.